other horns don't.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a selfless big play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, yes.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
None of them
players
play against. They make us ask play. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by Bama Hammer. Tom, we're back and celebrating another championship of sorts, eh?
Yeah, man. You know, as we do this signing day show, I think back to the pre-Saban days when we were probably following it very closely each evening and even reading all the interviews from the different recruits that, you know, that Rodney Orr would post. And we were probably hanging on this stuff 4 or 5 days a week and having a lot of lost productive work hours. And I remember it being a big deal if we would get a 4-star player in the class. And so I found myself earlier today looking at a link someone had provided with where the 5 stars had signed this morning. And I was like, isn't this funny? I'm just kind of checking out where the 5 stars of the 28 undecided 5 stars are going versus when I used to like make a big deal when we had a 4-star player. So it's a, you know, the cupboards are definitely full with Coach Saban as we knew they would be.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right? I mean, when we used to follow it, you know, back in another time, you know, top ranked players at their position and 5-star recruits, you know, they were unicorns. And now we eat unicorn steak, right? I mean, that's kind of where we are now.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, and some services will say that we had 3 or 4 3-stars in this class. And, you know, everything else is above that, which is definitely an awesome thing.
Yeah.
And it just speaks to what we've said when he first got here and why Alabama was so smart to bring this guy in. And, you know, kudos to Mal Moore that he had the foresight to do what he did.
Yeah, it's one of those. And this becomes sort of our mythical, you know, annual recruiting show kind of story. But, you know, when we sat down to do you know, for sort of a post bowl game, you know, new coaching, you know, recruiting kind of wrap up show, you know, a couple of years ago. And I think it was Saban's, you know, second or third year. And we talked about, you know, there was reports that, you know, over the last 3 years, Alabama was the only team that had 3 top 10 finishes in recruiting. And they were all, even at that point, you know, in the top 3, but the only school in the top 10. And we were just sort of just flabbergasted at that. And, you know, that was 6 years ago. And we've been within the top 3 every year since then. And so what we thought was monumental was only the foundation to, you know, to even what out came today. And it's just, it gets more and more amazing, more and more unbelievable, but almost, you know, at the same time, more and more expected. So I don't know how to reconcile those two things, but, you know, that's the world we live in, right?
No, absolutely, man. I'll tell you one other quick thing that I thought about is, you know, you just have to trust the process, as Saban says, and you just have to trust his screening process of what he's looking for. Because I think back to the days where we had players like BJ Scott, who was a highly heralded number one athlete in the country, 5-star player out of Agger High School, who, when he got to the university for different things and injuries and different things that he had to overcome, you know, he ended up finishing his career elsewhere. And you think of guys like Tyler Love, who was the number one offensive tackle in the nation, 5-star player that, you know, never really contributed at the University of Alabama. And so what I really like about how Saban does things is this year he has the highest average ranking per player class, as opposed to just the top class. And if we go back and look at the past 5 or 6 years, his average star rating is typically like 3.96, right? It's like right at 4 stars. And Saban gets the fact that you're not going to hit on every one, right? And so, you know, Stuart Mandel put a great piece out, you know, formerly with Sports Illustrated this week, where he was breaking down people's research on the 5-star, the 4-star, and the 3-star. And the bottom line of his research is, yes, the stars matter. And when it comes to 5 stars, 1 out of every 4 are going to be a significant contributor early. And 1 out of 64, 3 stars, is going to be a significant contributor early. And so when you look at Saban's class based on that number and his average stars is 3.95, you're like, well, damn, you know, we're really doing something here. And that's what I guess I want to, you know, mention now instead of at the end of the show for the listeners is that he's getting a high quality class depth wise, which is why he can run 12 defensive linemen out there on the field.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's balance even within that balance, right? He's not looking at just the top guys and then just whoever he can get, right? He's looking for quality through the entire class. And so there's balance there. But then there's a balance sort of distributed across who he's getting and the positions that he's filling. And, you know, and so I'm such a wonk. I keep all of my sort of handwritten notes that I make for these shows. And I went back and looked at the last couple of recruiting classes that we did. And sure enough, the pattern presents itself. You know, this year we signed 25 recruits, 12 on offense, 13 on defense. But wait, that's not all. You know, on offense, 1 quarterback, 5 linemen, 2 running backs, 2 receivers, 2 tight ends. On defense, 4 defensive linemen, 4 linebackers, 1 safety, 4 cornerbacks. You know, there's your team, right? And so every year you're signing a new sort of roster, right? A new starting lineup, so to speak, right? A new starting 22 with some of your, you know, your flexibility points. And so you do that every year, every year, every year, and you never have a position that you're really weak at unless you're sort of transitioning. You know, you can have players leave early. You can have injuries, anything, you know, you can have those types of things, but you're planning in such a way that you're always going to have depth ready to go in place.
No, I agree, man. And you also have to look, you know, I just happened to be looking at the ESPN, you know, they call it the ESPN 300 from 2015 here as we were starting this call. And I also want to point out that, you know, ESPN doesn't hand out a lot of 5 stars. I'm looking at this list, and last year they had 25 stars, their top 20 players. Everybody below that, you know, started dropping at 4 stars. Well, last year, subjectively from all these people, which is why I think Saban doesn't love some of this process, your number one wide receiver in last year's class with ESPN was Calvin Ridley. And he was at number 23. So he was the number one wide receiver on their board, but he was still listed as a 4-star, and he was still listed as number 23. A Minkah Fitzpatrick was listed as the 3rd top cornerback, also a 4-star, as the number 27 player. And finally, Damian Harris was listed as the number 2 running back with them versus 1 with some other services. And he was a 4-star, and he was listed as the 36th player. I say that real quick to mention that Damian Harris, because of where he came to play, right, he didn't really contribute the way he would have liked to as he could have in a Kentucky Wildcat uniform, right? And a Calvin Ridley, by many, if ESPN could reshuffle their top 30 from last year now, do you think Calvin Ridley would still be number 23?
Yeah. And Minkah, right?
Yeah. So my point is, he was their number one wide receiver. They weren't saying anything bad about him. They just chose to rank other positions higher than they did wide receiver last year. So as we do this show tonight, it's also important for us to think about what pieces we already have on this team because of the depth that we have and the resources that we have. And that also comes into play with Saban, right? Saban's smart enough to know that he signed Blake Barnett last year, and he's smart enough to know he signed Damian Harris, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's interesting as well.
Yeah, I think so, right? And if you go in looking to sign sort of a balanced class every time, then, you know, that sort of builds upon itself, and you're not just chasing either shiny objects in one direction or chasing a miss in another direction. And so, but I agree. And I like the way you kind of set up for us kind of diving in and talking about some of the players. You know, I think we've got a couple of categories we want to step through, and let's start with day one contributors. You know, the way you set that up is perfect, right? That doesn't necessarily mean these guys are going to be the next Calvin Ridley and Minka Fitzpatrick. It may mean that they're the next Darren Payne, right? That's a freshman that comes in and contributes. And so it doesn't mean superstar status, but not necessarily, but it certainly means an opportunity to come in and fit a void or a potential void or opportunity that exists on the team. So why don't we walk through, you know, you probably got two or three guys in mind. I probably got two or three guys in mind. We probably got some of the same guys in mind. And we'll kind of net out with probably three or four guys that we think are going to be have the potential to be day one contributors from this year's signing class. And I'll kick it over to you. Why don't you give me your first one?
Well, man, I am so confident that you will not have my first one that I'm going to steal your first one. And I am going to guess your first one is no other than Charles Baldwin.
Yeah,
I think correct.
Well, you know, I've got a couple kind of grouped, but I think he's an easy pick, right? I mean, anytime
he is,
you pick JUCO tackle, where we're losing a JUCO tackle in Dom, I mean, I'll kind of let you finish the thought there, but that's an easy one, right?
No, it is. But what's interesting is I got to give some props to some of the guys I listened to here over the past few days, just to hear the, you know, what was on the airwaves. I was very happy to hear that, and it's probably because Alabama is a perennial dynasty that they had some of these facts so readily available. But I love how they were telling the listeners, you know, names like James Carpenter. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's not that long ago, right? But you look at James Carpenter and you look at Dominic Jackson and you look at, you know, Coach Saban, one of his MOs, you know, as you were mentioning the balance on offense and defense, you know, we got to start calling his ace of spades in his poker hand is let me go find, you know, one of the top two JUCO offensive tackles in the country. And if we go back and look at all these classes, man, this is becoming one of his MOs. And I just think it's brilliant. I won't say brilliant. I'm wondering why more coaches don't try to do this, or I wonder the writing on the wall. Okay, take Charles Baldwin. I'd love to know how many perennial big schools went after the kid. What I mean by that is over the past several years, you see Saban gets the number one ranked JUCO offensive tackle, right? Well, lots of football programs have offensive linemen who don't shake out, who don't get where they want them to be quick enough, et cetera. You and I both know two of the hardest positions, the three hardest positions to fill in the offensive line is the center, the left tackle, and then the right tackle. And so I wonder why more teams don't do this, because Saban seems to be having a great deal of success. You know, I'd say right now he might be four out of the last five at this position. And, you know, take Dominic Jackson. We thought Dominic Jackson was going to come in and start on day one. And to Austin Shepherd's credit, he didn't. And so it's like Coach Saban is like he's putting some insurance there, right? He's like, I got me a guy who can bring some competition against all these young high school freshmen who are now juniors, and I'm just going to let Battle Royale happen and see who wins the job at right tackle. Is it going to be a Charles Baldwin this year? Or is it going to be, you know, some guy who's in his third year at Alabama who pops on the scene and everybody's like, who are you? So this is just what Saban does every year, man. I think I hope he lives up to his billing.
Yeah, it keeps everybody on their toes, right? I mean, the guy that's been in the system that thinks that they're just going to inherit the position, you know, they have, it's like they're going to the next round of battle, right? Now I've got to battle this JUCO that just came in, who took a different path and is coming in expecting to start. And so, you know, those guys have to battle it out. And so, you know, you have two guys that might otherwise expect that they're going to just waltz into the job. You know, they have to come in and compete for it. And so part of it's competition, part of it's getting the best guys available. But, you know, he has quite a track record at the JUCOs and especially across the offensive line. You know, Jane Carpenter is a good one. You know, we can talk about Leon Brown and you know, we've talked a little bit about the good and a little bit about bad about him. You know, there was the Aaron Douglas situation. And of course, that was, you know, that sort of ended in a little bit of tragic situation there. But you know, he goes, you know, the MO is there, right? Just like you said, he goes and gets these guys and he fosters the competition, builds out his roster. And yeah, in terms of picking day one contributors from the signing class, Charles Baldwin is, you know, that's low hanging fruit. But, you know, it certainly should be at the top of anyone's board because, you know, if you're paying attention to what Saban does, you know, pretty obvious there.
Well, I will also tell you real quick before you give me a player that, you know, as we looked at last year's depth on this team, right, for all the good recruiting classes that he's had, right, consistently. On last year's two deep, we had a converted defensive lineman at left tackle in Corin Kervin, and we had a converted offensive lineman moved to tight end and back to offensive line in Brandon Green at right tackle. So, you know, for whatever reason, he understands that this is an ongoing, I won't say problem, but I'll just say in the past 5 years, I never remember a year where we have the second team guy that we say you're definitely going to be the guy when the senior graduates. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think there's going to be a lot of competition. I think Baldwin's going to be in the two deep. And you make a good point, right? I mean, you know, we're looking at opportunities in the two deep because, you know, God bless it, Corin Kervin, but I don't think, and we've talked about it, I don't think either of us expected necessarily that he was going to be in the two deep. And Brandon Green, we've kind of moved him around, you know, mostly out of necessity at a couple of different positions. And so,
but they're your two deep tackles, David, on a football team that's won four out of the last seven national championships.
Yep.
You wouldn't say that, right?
No.
You wouldn't think that. So give me your next player. Give me your player.
Yeah. And so all this talk about JUCO, I guess I'm going to zig, instead of zag, but, you know, I tell you the guy that probably impresses me as much as anyone out of this entire class. And I'm so excited watching his high school film, and I'm so excited to see what he's going to do when he gets to campus. But that's the Hulk, Kendall Jones, 6'5", 360-pound lineman, is just so quick off the line. And I know some of the film, he's doing it against high school kids, and you know, some of that probably isn't fair. But his first step is probably as quick as I have seen from a big man. You know, we can talk about Cody, but this guy I think is faster. He's not as big, but he's faster than Cody with his first step. I mean, he was taking swim moves that were so quick that he wasn't even touching the offensive lineman. You know, they couldn't have blocked him in like literally two-hand touch because he was getting, you know, past double teams almost before he could be touched. And he's as big and powerful as he is. He's going to be a brute force. I think he's a day one contributor.
Well, I was being sarcastic a minute ago because that's who I was going to start with. But I knew that the love fest, you know, my buddy Dave here finds a player listeners that he can connect to on day one. And I kind of knew this kid was going to be that guy. And, you know, some services have him at 350 pounds and some services have him at 375 pounds. And, you know, I hope neither one of those are true, but when you look at the kid, he looks like his body fat competition's about 1.8%, and it's just really ridiculous that, you know, that he has that kind of body at this young age. And I love the fact that, you know, Coach Saban probably got on him a lot sooner than a lot of other players, other teams did. And let's face it, the kid, you know, while he's playing high school football, he is playing in a state called TX for its, you know, abbreviation. And Texas football is pretty serious. And so, you know, I will say, you know, teams, people might see, oh, he was ranked the 39th player in his state. Yeah, but that's because it was from freaking the state of Texas. And so they play big boy football over there. And, you know, I definitely agree with you that, as Jim McElwain likes to call it, our front 30, he will be in our front 30 for sure.
Yeah, he's in the rotation without a doubt, and I think he may compete for a starting job. And so I don't know why you thought I would sort of latch onto this guy, but man, you're spot on, because as I was going through it and I was going through it and I was going through it, I kept coming back. This might be my favorite guy in this class, you know, as we sit, you know, check back in 2 years, but as we sit here right now, Kendall Jones, I mean, but maybe my favorite in this entire class.
Well, what I really love about the kid, because we obviously haven't gotten to know him, you know, much yet, is that he committed May 22nd of last year. There was no drama. Yep. He's not a five-star prima donna. I'm not saying five stars are prima donnas, but he's not a prima donna, right? Yeah. And he knew in May where he wanted to commit. And the other thing to me that's a real green flag about this kid is he only had one official visit. And so he had basically 12 schools listed on his board, and he only had one official visit. He could have taken five. He could have been wined and dined by five places. He could have been on five airplanes, and he didn't. So that makes me hope the boy says, you know what, I'm gonna follow in A'shaun Robinson's footsteps, and I know where I want to go, and let's just get started and let's get after it. Well, and, I think that's awesome.
Hey, let's be realistic, man. If you're 18 years old and you have the opportunity to go to these different college campuses and be treated the way that we probably would imagine some of these recruits are treated, man, I don't want to take every one of those trips.
I'm with you. But the fact that he didn't, the fact that he's been committed since May and he only took one visit, which tells me he knew what he wanted,
yep.
which makes me think he's got laser focus, a good head on his shoulders, and that excites me.
Oh, yeah. It definitely speaks to his maturity. It's a maturity that some would say I lack today, and I certainly didn't have then.
All right, so as far as and obviously, you know, let me say here real quick with the day one contributor, you know, I just want to tell the listeners real quick. I remember an image in 2009, and I remember in the first home game in Bryant-Denny, I remember looking over on the sideline, and I see three guys standing side by side. They all have their helmets on, their chin straps are buttoned up. They got their hands up there, up on the neck of their shoulder pads. Mm-hmm. And I see Dre Kirkpatrick, number one cornerback in the nation, five star. Trent Richardson, number one running back in the nation, five star. DJ Fluker, number one offensive tackle in the nation, five star. And all three of these guys couldn't get on the field.
Right.
And that was in 2009, right? The empire had not been built at that point the way it is today. So while this is fun to discuss, obviously you and I both know day one contributors will hopefully be few and far between. Before you steal another one of mine, I'm going to go ahead and do another obvious one. I'll let you do the obscure ones. I'm going to go ahead and pick our boy Ben Davis, which is a very easy pick. And I say this because, you know, we had that big linebacker class, right, that Reggie Ragland came out of, correct? And literally in that class, we had five stud linebackers. And none of them could really see the field because of the complexity of the defensive scheme. So this is a little bit of a reach for me, because not many true freshman linebackers really get to contribute early. And I think this kid's going to, and I think that part of it has to do with the amount of people we are losing on this year's team. He's got the prototypical size. He's got the versatility to cover against the pass. He's got the understanding of, I think, picking up the playbook. And I think this guy is going to be a contributor from day one.
You know, I think, and definitely he was on my list in this category, but, you know, I kind of put a question mark to it, and it's, I mean, it's certainly nothing against him. I think he has all the tools, you know, he's going to be a very good linebacker. But what I couldn't get over is trying to think back, who was the last contributing linebacker as a freshman under Saban? And is it Roe McClain? Is it that? Does it go that far back?
No, man. We had Trey DePriest. Trey DePriest had to step in week 7 or 8 due to injuries. And he stepped in as a true freshman, and we were kind of surprised that he did. But when you know, when the listeners, y'all look at this class and you look at these two stud linebackers, and you know, we talk about these gets. Well, you know, just to finish all the names in that class real quick, we've got Dylan Lee Sr. gone. Reggie Ragland Sr. gone.
Yep.
Denzel Duvall Sr. gone. You know, we've got Ryan Anderson, who obviously, you know, is a class behind them, who I thought was in that same class. And I may be mistaken, but I thought he was in that same class. But we have several linebackers on this team who are graduating. And I think the time is right. And so, unlike a Trey DePriest who contributed halfway through the season, I think this guy is going to be definitely in the two deep from day one.
Yeah, you're right. I know C.J. Mosley played some as a freshman, you know, kind of came on here and there. And then DePriest was maybe the one that I was missing. So, yeah, Ben Davis, that's a good pick. I think that there's certainly a need, and I think he has the talent. You know, I think he has an opportunity to get in there. I'm going to give you B.J. Emmons as maybe my last one in this category. You know, 230-pound running back. If we look at our roster right now at running back, I think we're thin. You know, we're going to have Bo and we're going to have Damian, both freshmen, both with limited experience. They have more experience than obviously B.J. will coming in, but I just think, you know, we're going to be looking for some depth there, and he's not going to be so far behind them, and they're not established and entrenched. You know, this will be the first year that we've not had an entrenched incumbent in the number one spot, you know, for quite a while. If you go, you know, Derek and then Yeldon and then Lacey and then Trent and then Mark, I mean, how long has it been since you know, we've not had a clear cut? And everyone says Bo, but that's just because we like to think and hope that it's Bo. Well, we don't know that because we've not seen him, you know, do the things that, you know, the other guys had, right, to clearly establish himself. And so I think not having seen that, the need to sort of build up some depth where we haven't had it, I think BJ has an opportunity, a unique opportunity, to come in as a freshman and really get into the rotation. And I would count that as a day one contribution at the position.
Okay. Well, I definitely I will say for him, I kind of had him in my red shirt bucket.
Okay.
And that's probably more hopeful that the other two guys will be the two-headed dragon that Saban likes to use. But like you said, that's very unproven right now. If BJ was getting there, you know, he's still got some things he's got to clean up before the fall, which I hope he'll be able to do. But definitely, if he was one of the 7 early enrollees, I think I'd go more your way. But I think right now, I hope you're right, because I've heard he's really good out of the backfield, has good hands, and might be a little bit more of an all-around back already than some of our previous guys who have, you know, come to campus, who have not had, you know, some of the pass protection and some of the hands out of the backfield on day one. But we'll just have to see.
I just think there's going to be an opportunity, right? I think if you take – with Damian and Bo, and I'm making this up, and we're going to see how the season plays out. But if we get back to the rotating possessions, like, you know, like we did with Mark and Trent and Yeldon and Lacey, and so, you know, they get in a two possession, you know, kind of back and forth, then you get into, you know, the midway through the third and we're up on teams, then, you know, how do you sort of rotate someone into that mix? I think we will be looking for someone. And so we may have the two sort of frontline guys, but we'll be looking for someone else. And that very easily could be a capable true freshman to come in and be that third guy that will have a distinct role, you know, in our sort of our back, if we go back to the rotation model. I mean, how blessed were we? Think about the days when the rotation was Mark and Trent, and then the late game back was Lacey.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Can you do that at one school?
We did somehow. We absolutely did.
And then the guys
did.
That come after that are Yeldon and Henry. I mean, I don't know.
Are you serious? Yeah, yeah, you just those five guys, right? We could, you know, and we're not called running back. You, that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
So give me the first. Explain the set up the next category for the listeners, and give me your first one there.
Yeah. So next category is you know I call it kind of the career achievement, and there's no knock on that, right? I mean, you come into some positions and there's just a log jam. It doesn't matter how much talent you have. There's talent in front of you. There's incumbent talent. And so you're probably going to redshirt, but still have the opportunity for a miraculous career. And so the poster child for this is an A.J. McCarron, right? Clearly he was not going to start. And this doesn't mean that it's a quarterback specific position, but you know, you mentioned three guys, right? Dre and Trent and Fluka, right? Those are good examples where they come in and don't start.
They were studs. Yeah.
But they redshirt, but by, you know, but they have an outstanding career kind of, you know, by the time it's over. And so, you know, that's kind of this next position. And I've got, you know, a handful of guys that can fit in here. And, you know, again, there's kind of maybe an easy one. I'm going to go with, I hope I say his name correctly, cause I gotta, you know, I'm bad about that. I gotta learn, but, Nigel Knott, the cornerback, I think he has supreme talent. I think he's incredible. I think an incredible athlete, and some of the videos that I've seen of him are quite impressive. I think he comes into a position where we do have a little bit of a logjam. Now, we play a lot of cornerbacks. Hell, we played a dime, you know, with five corners and six corners, you know, kind of in, you know, in different sort of alignments. And so there's a lot of opportunity, but, you know, he may be a little bit smaller. He may benefit by a year in the weight room and a year at kind of letting the position kind of clear itself up a little bit. But I think by the time it's all said and done, he's going to be another one of the great cornerbacks to come out of Alabama. And so the guy that I would put sort of in the career achievement list is, you know, Nigel Knott.
Now, but with your career achievement, right, he just has to redshirt his first year. But he could easily still contribute in year two, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm really
shocked. Marlon Humphrey is a great example, right? I mean, there was no room for him on the field as a freshman. As a redshirt freshman, he's a starter.
Yeah. Well, I'm really
contribution, but don't tell me he's not a contributing player. Don't tell me he's not going to have a great career, right?
Well, I'm ashamed of you, dude. I kind of gave you a layup. I let you go first. This I thought really was a shoe-in. So I guess, you know, you took mine to start with and you didn't take this one. So I'm going to go ahead and take it before you take it. And I think this is the poster child in this year's class for red shirt because of log jam. And that's Terrell Hall. Okay. I think Terrell Hall is a kid that is that, Xavier Dixon mold. He is the prototypical 6'5", 6'6", rangy kid. He comes in listed at 250 right now. You know, he was a number one player in his state. You know, he had several very well-respected schools on this kid. I think this was a big get for out. This is the rich getting richer. This is the kind of crap that's got to piss off Florida and Florida State and Ole Miss and sure. other schools that got him on campus, because they had to show this kid the depth we have in our front seven. right? They had to show this kid. They had to say, look, we want to introduce you. We want to introduce you to a couple players on the 2015 University of Alabama football team. We want to introduce you to Tim Williams. And here's some video of Tim Williams. And here's some video of Rashawn Evans. And you're not going to see the field, boy, because of 32 and 56. Well, by damn, Saban still got the kid. And I don't think we'll see the kid on the field this year. I think Alabama hopes we don't see the kid on the field this year because of Ryan Anderson and Dalvin Tomlinson and Jonathan Allen. And oh, by the way, the guy that everybody forgot about, Deshaun Hand. But he will bust on the scene next year.
Yeah, and I think there's a potential that you're right. I think that, you know, the irony is if other teams are going to show Tim Williams film as a motivation to lure this kid away from Alabama, guess what Alabama is doing? Alabama is showing him Tim Williams film, saying, yes. You know, yes. he was top five in the country in sacks and played maybe a third of the time. Do you think you could probably be good enough to get a third of the snaps, defensive snaps? Maybe, probably you could. And in fact, this is who you are. You are Tim Williams just showing up on campus day one about 15 or 20 pounds heavier. And so where he was a clear red shirt because he wasn't big enough to go, you're already big enough to go. You're already almost as big as he is now. And if your first step can be near what his first step is, then yeah, you can get 20%. You can potentially, even as a freshman, get 10 to 15 to 18% of the defensive snaps and contribute. So that same footage that teams are using against Alabama, I just think Alabama says, great, that's awesome, because we're going to use that footage to recruit him.
No, absolutely. I just I just really think that this is a kid that, you know, you look at a Deshaun Hand who was listed at 6'4", 273, who, you know, I'd have to go back and check and see where he was when he got here, but he was probably in that 250 range. And I just think that this is the rich getting richer. This is Alabama saying, you know, we're getting our stud edge rusher 2 years ahead of time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I would put him as potentially a day one contributor, but certainly in the career category. You know, and I think because his body weight today, I think he's Tim Williams 2.0 and on a faster track because he's already got that 20 pounds underneath him. And so it still wouldn't hurt him to redshirt, but I think there's an opportunity for him to do something day one.
Give me your next guy that you've got listed there.
You know, I really have my eye on, and there's so many guys, right? And so when we don't list someone, it doesn't mean we don't like them. It's just we're picking a handful of guys. If you listen to our show, you know that we could spend the next 3 hours talking about these guys, and we're not. And so we're just kind of going off a short list. But I tell you that Jared Maben, the cornerback, he kind of jumps out to me as a career guy. And again, another cornerback, but you know, he's 6 foot 202. And so he's a big cornerback. You know, is he an Eddie Williams kind of guy? And so is he a guy that when we really move these big cornerbacks into a safety position so that really we have more coverage ability and more speed on the field, does he really play sort of a hybrid, you know, Eddie Williams type position? And I don't know what we call that, right? A free safety, strong safety, you know, sort of a corner safety position. But I see, you know, Saban saying, look, I've got this template of now how I'm going to run the defense. I'm going to go get guys that fit these new hybrid molds. Jared Maben fits that mold.
No, I can see that. I can definitely see that as far as his measurables and what he can bring to the table. And it's a situation where, you know, potentially he could be on the cusp too, right? Because we can argue that, you know, we're moving cornerbacks to safety, right, when they get to college or we've been trying this now. And we definitely We definitely still don't have the depth at safety that we would like to have. And so, if he moves into that dime type of role, you have to wonder, would he see the field? I mean, you can argue that between Ronnie Harrison and Hootie Jones and Sean Burgess Becker, that there's enough depth there that he will not, right? I guess that's kind of where you're going with that.
Yeah, you know, I think there's enough players already in position, you know, and Eddie Jackson's coming back too, that, you know, I wouldn't pencil him in as a day one. I think he probably does redshirt. But I just see if that's the direction that we're going to go in the secondary, I think that he has the opportunity – he has the opportunity to compete well. I think he was I've read so many notes and stats and metrics on guys. I may have this a little bit wrong, but it seemed like he's a top 15 cornerback, and so he was very well regarded. And so if his size allows us to take his cornerback acumen and do something just a little bit different with him, I think – and look, I'm not jumping him ahead of all of these other guys, but I think that would put him in position to have a very unique skill set. I think Eddie Jackson has a very unique skill set. And some of these guys I haven't seen, and so I don't know if they've got it or not. You know, Hootie Ingram Hootie Jones played some as a freshman, but he couldn't find the field last year. And so is he going to emerge this year and be who we thought he was going to be, or is he not going to catch up? Right. And we've had guys that don't catch up. Right. And so, well, which bucket is he going to be in? I don't know. Spring, he's going to be a top 10 question for me because that'll be his opportunity. But Jared, this Maben kid has an opportunity, and I haven't seen him at this level either. I'm just saying, based on what I see, based on, you know, here's how I connect the dots. He just has an opportunity to come in with a unique skill set that Ronnie Harrison doesn't, because Ronnie Harrison's more of a true strong safety. You know, the Becker kid, we'll have to see, right? And so, I don't know how it's going to play out, but I think he has a fast track to kind of insert himself into the mix. And when I say fast track, I really mean after a redshirt year. You know, as a redshirt freshman, look out. You know, he may have a role in the two deep in the secondary.
No, I can definitely see that after he's had some time in the program.
And Eddie Jackson will be, you know, gone. So it'll be a little bit of time in the program, getting his sort of his legs and his system knowledge under him, and then kind of clearing out a couple of the guys that are ahead of him on the roster.
No, I'm with you, man. Well, let's set up this next category for the listeners, and I'll, after you set up the category, I'll take the first one.
You got one more career achievement, or?
You know, I think there's a handful of other guys that we could still throw in there. Do you have one that you really want to get out there that jumps out at you?
I think you got to go Jalen Hurts at the quarterback. He's mobile. He might have to wait a little bit if Barrett's going to, get the job. But I think he's someone to look at. I really like Scott Lashley, the lineman, and Irvin Smith, the tight end. So, yeah, I had one.
Well, I'm surprised. I'm surprised you didn't throw out Jonah Williams too, man.
He's on the list.
I definitely think there's a handful of guys that we could throw out there. For sure. Go ahead and set up the next category.
You know, this last category is really just who's, you know, it's more of a dark horse impact kind of player. Who's a guy that maybe just didn't fit real comfortably in one of the other buckets, but there's just something about this kid or something about this prospect that he's going to find a role at some point and really has an opportunity to, you know, contribute or potentially even, be dynamic. And so who's a guy that you just really wanted to say something about that, that we didn't cover in either of these first two categories?
Okay. Well, gosh, you just ran through a lot of guys there.
I shouldn't have done that then, right?
You should have kind of saved that one. Well, this will be an easy one as well. For no reason did he not get mentioned before, but we have to talk about the other really, really good get near to dear to my heart, and that's Lindell Wilson. Has nothing to do for his social media prowess. It has more to do with the huge need because of all the linebackers that we are losing to get this guy out of Auburn's backyard, the little sister of the poor. You know, comes in at a 6'2", 220, some services having ranked the number one outside linebacker, some having ranked number two. I could care less as long as he's in the top five or six. But this is a kid that seems to fit the mold of the smaller, more athletic linebackers who can stay on the field on third down and fill a role that we really didn't have last year. We had to bring a Ronnie Harrison in and play a dime in order to get that. And take nothing away from Reggie, take nothing away from Reuben Foster, but you and I were sitting in Arizona during that lovely, crappy fourth quarter game of up and down basketball, and we watched the fifth wide receiver for Clemson, you know, running the tongues off of Reggie Ragland and Reuben Foster because they were gassed. Nothing against them, it's because they were 240, 245, 250 pounds. So Lindell Wilson has a chance to come in and try to fill a need that is very important for us. And so I couldn't decide. I don't think he's going to redshirt. I don't know that he's going to fill the need on day one quite the same way Ben Davis is. But I think when the first season's over, we're going to look back and say, Wilson made a couple key plays this season that we needed him in there for.
I think that's a great pick, right? I think that we do have more of a pressing need in the middle, but we can always use another good outside linebacker. And I think that we do have some guys on the roster, some guys that redshirted that can contribute at that position. But, you know, if Mack Wilson is as good as is advertised, then he'll step in and compete well with some of those other guys. And, again, that doesn't mean he earns the starting spot, you know, from the jump. But if he works his way into the rotation, then, you know, he could be a contributing rotation guy, you know, mid-season. And that'd be a nice place to be.
Oh, sure. And here's kind of what I mean by that. We've been blessed with some good linebacker play, but there's been only one CJ Mosley.
Sure.
Reggie Ragland, right? His primary role was run stuffer. He showed the ability to put his hand in the dirt this year, rushing the passer, and did it exceedingly well. Okay. And Reggie Ragland, congratulations for staying another year. You absolutely have become even a more well-rounded linebacker in your senior year. But if you look at several linebackers that we had on last year's team, they were really, really, really good at one or two things. But I would dare say that just due to measurables and their body and their makeups, you know, as you said, Coach Saban is phenomenal at situational starters. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of situational starters on our team that play jack linebacker, will linebacker, middle linebacker, or rotate around. And this kid comes in with the ability to add to a situational need that I don't think we've had enough guys step up and say, my number's called, I'd like to be that guy.
Yeah, I agree. As you were kind of stepping that through, if you could have seen the grin on my face. So does Saban lay his head on his pillow tonight with the grin that says, in 2 to 3 years from now, today, I have signed a more athletic Reggie Ragland in Ben Davis, and the next C.J. Mosley in Mac Wilson. Does he sit back and say, yep, in about 2 years, I'm going to have Ragland and Mosley on
the field at the same time?
Yeah.
No, I can see that. I can absolutely see that sadistic son of a gun doing exactly that.
That's a great sort of vision for this last sort of dark horse category. I've got a guy that I'm going to put in this category that I am really excited about, and I'm glad that his name. I took the gamble. Can we get this far into the show without his name coming up? And I have been successful. And so this guy, his name was late brought up in the whole recruiting mix, right? And I think Saban even said that he did not start watching film on this guy until after the national championship. And so this is how late to the recruiting mix this guy has been. But we were able to secure Joshua Jacobs, 5'10", 197-pound running back. And, when I was kind of perusing the final signees and kind of even, through the recruiter, the recruiting, there was one player, there was one name that I was looking for. Where is the next Kenyon Drake? A very dynamic player that can make contributions in a lot of different ways. Where is that guy in this class? And there wasn't one, not until today. He may redshirt, and so we may not see this. And you don't just go get a Kenyon Drake. You have to grow and evolve a Kenyon Drake, that type of X-factor contributor. But at 5'10", 197, an all-purpose back, been used a lot of success as a wide receiver, as well as a running back. Joshua Jacobs, to me, is a dark horse. And a dark horse, maybe even to contribute this year. And I'll throw a name at you. And we spent a couple minutes on a podcast early in the year when Kenyon got hurt talking about Xavier Marks. What the heck was Xavier Marks doing on the field? Well, we were giving looks to defenses in a way that's how Kenyon was contributing. And Joshua Jacobs may be that guy. He may be the guy that can come in and look, we've got a Jacobs package with about, five or eight plays that were given looks, were forcing the defense to defend the whole field. You're going to come in and run a couple of these through the course of a ball game and then evolve into even more over his career. He's a guy that I'd keep an eye on.
Well, it makes you wonder. Saban said something like, Burns showed him some footage of the kid, right?
Yep.
And Burns even said he had seen him play basketball and how athletic he was, et cetera. And Saban, something like, we thought something might be wrong with the kid.
Yep.
What's the deal? And, I got to tell you, man, as I'm looking at some of these numbers here, that you see the kid is listed as a, two things that jump out at me real quick for the listeners, and forgive me if y'all have already spotted this, but the kid is showing a 4.4 40.
Yep.
Now, that might be fudging a little because, let's face it, only a couple guys ran under 4.4 in the whole NFL combine last year, and he's listed as 4.40. But I got to tell you what jumps out at me at this kid is 2013, his sophomore year, he has 150 carries, 12 touchdowns, 1,300 yards. His junior year, he has 115 carries, 1,000 yards, 14 touchdowns. You're like, okay, what happened? Kid must have got hurt. He went down from 1,300 to 1,000 yards. 2015, dude, unless this is a freaking misprint, 179 rushing attempts for 2,704 yards and 36 freaking touchdowns. Are you kidding me? So the kid had 2,700, twice as many yards as his sophomore year on only 30 more carries.
Yep.
And three times as many touchdowns. So for the kid's career, because he only carried the ball 55 times as a freshman, he finishes his career with 498 touches for 5,376 yards. So that's I'm how sorry.
Derek had in November, right?
No, no. I'm just thinking, dude. Over 5,000 yards, and you had over 2,700 yards on less than 200 carries. Wow. I mean, yeah,
and you know, I kind of saw, you know, where Saban was talking, kind of talking about, you know, the process with this kid, and he said, you know, it's like, oh yeah, we're gonna find something's wrong with this guy. You know, it's almost like I've been doing this long enough. You don't find this kind of thing.
Why is this kid still available? Because
yeah, it's like, okay, well, there's got to be something we just haven't found, right? I mean, he's got some sort of something going on. And
well, dude, and he's an Oklahoma kid, right? And he's from Tulsa, and he had an official visit with the Missouri Tigers on January 29th, and then he had an official visit with Alabama on the 30th. So I love you bringing this kid up, and this is another example of the rich getting richer, and that's just got to piss off the Oklahoma Sooners and the Missouri Tigers.
Yeah, we're gonna go get this guy because we need an X factor player. I mean, who says that? I mean, say that out loud, right? I mean, who says that? Oh, we need a third down, you know, specialist or something. You know, we need this niche. Well, I mean, you know. Some people are trying to build the left side of their line, right?
Well, for the listeners, I'm going to butcher what year it was, so I'm not going to mention it. But I saw some stuff today quoting a Derek Dooley quote when he was at Tennessee. And you can probably remember this better than I can, but I guess he told the media up there at the time, Coach Saban doesn't do recruiting class. He just drafts players.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's true, right? And I read, you know, someone talking about today that, you know, everyone else is recruiting and Saban is selecting.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. Hey, I like the dark horse, man. I liked how we kind of evolved that into sort of a singular player, and I like what we did there. So that was fun. So just let's hit two sort of fast break topics. What's the biggest miss? And so obviously we're not calling any of these guys a bust or pan because that's, you know, it's way too, and there's none of these guys that I think is a bust. Let's be clear, but it's, you know, that's not even the route we're going. What's the biggest miss in the class? What's something you wish we had gotten in the class? Maybe it's a specific player, maybe it's a position, but what's something that would have been nice if we could have gotten this, but we didn't.
You know, I think probably the biggest miss has to be I'll start with the position, and I know this wasn't by design. The biggest miss has to be wide receiver. I think Saban would have probably preferred to have another wide receiver. You mentioned running back. Saban even said today we've got one. I think he was quoted as saying he had one left, and that. He even commented that, you know, the skill positions have been very good to him as I'm paraphrasing, but the skill positions seem to be the positions where you'll have a graduate transfer. And a la what we just saw, you know, Chris Black do, Saban's going to look to get him a graduate transfer, I think, at either the wide receiver position because Richard Mullaney worked out so well, or at the running back position. So if I had to mention a guy that I think they thought they were going to get, it would have to be A.J. Brown from Starkville, Mississippi, that was in Ole Miss's backyard that they were able to save. I think that's the kid that if the truth be known, somebody signed today that would not have signed had he got that kid.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that he's certainly somebody that I thought we were going to land him. And, you know, that's I wish we had. And so, you know, he's going to be like a look, you know, he may be, another Treadwell, right, where, you know, he's just going to have some success there for the Rebs. I kind of lament that. I'm going to say the biggest miss that I noted in this class, and ironically, it's the same miss that I noted in the recruiting class last year. And last year I predicted that we were going to sign three tight ends because we just got such a gap at the tight end position. And so we signed two, but the biggest gap is really the third tight end, not getting a big body at the tight end spot, a 250 plus pound you know, tight end, you know, 245, 240, 250, something in that ballpark. And I didn't even see that we were recruiting. You know, last year there were a couple of guys that we just missed on. I didn't see a whole lot of folks that we were definitely absolutely 100% going after that would have fit kind of in the Michael Williams role. And if anyone at Alabama sort of celebrates the Michael Williams era, it's us, right? You know, we need to meet this guy. But, you know, I'm a little disappointed that we didn't get that kind of tight end, big guy in the program.
No, I'm with you. And it makes you wonder if Saban is, I mean, because you know that we've tried to do this in the JUCO routes, right? And we've obviously experimented this with Ty Flourney Smith, right?
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder if he said, okay, well, I've tried this in the JUCO ranks and I've tried to do this from within. And it's just not kind of working right now. And so it makes you wonder if he's going to continue just doing from within his talented pool to find no-name guys that, I mean, let's face it, Michael Williams was brought in to play defense, right? He was a defensive end. And he's glad that Coach Saban did what he did, you know, for him. I would tell you, you know, the only guy – even the guy that they lost who flipped his commitment a couple days ago, Brendan Scales, the Missouri kid that stayed home in Missouri, he was only 220 pounds as well. And so, you know, he was listed as a guy that they thought they were going to get, but he even didn't fit the mold. And so to your point, it definitely makes you wonder, are we trying to go after that position with the full force that you would expect us to do?
Yeah, I mean that's a reasonable question, but then, you know, I don't know. Then you continue to see the guys that we bring over, and you know the Brandon Green and the Dakota Balls, and so you know we're still, it's as if we're still trying to get that guy in there. And so it's that's what makes me think that we're not recruiting that guy. We just haven't found him. And
well, I also wonder, Dave, if also wonder if the 250, 260 guy just doesn't exist. You know, I'm looking at the top 30 tight ends from this year's class, and you know, our buddy Kirby Smart signed 5-star number one kid out of Florida, 6'4", 235. As I scroll down this list, Stanford's got a kid who's 233, Ohio State 228, 220, 208, 223, 221 for Clemson. I mean, I only see one guy greater than 240, and that's the number two kid out of California that went to Michigan, and he's 6'5", 253. So yeah. I'm looking at the top 30 guys from this year's class, and only two of them are greater than 240 pounds. No, so it just might not exist right now.
Yeah, that's fair. And so, you know, I'm thinking of like, you know, last year there was Will Gregg and there was, you know, the Tyrone Wheatley Jr. And those were both sort of plus size, you know, tight ends, you know,
just I guess be more of an anomaly. Yeah.
Yeah, and that may be true, right? You know, in fairness, you know, the Irving Smith and I, you know, Irving Smith kind of being a late to the party sort of commit because he was Texas A&M and decommitted and didn't know what was going to happen with him. I think there's a correlation between, you know, the Brandon Missouri kid and Irving. I think, you know, we traded.
I got you.
And so, but in fairness, right? You know, and it depends on what services you look at. I've seen him listed as much as 240, and so you know, maybe that's the answer to the question. You know, maybe it's an Anfernee Jennings, and we talked about him last year as someone who and the recruiting did too, right? That he may be someone that ends up at tight end, and so you know, if I'm truly you know going to lose sleep over. You know, we didn't sign the next Michael Williams. Well, when we signed Michael Williams, I wouldn't have said we signed the next Michael Williams.
Correct.
Because we signed him as a defensive end. And so,
That's correct.
You know, it may be right here in front of me. It may be Irv Smith. It may be Anthony Jennings. He may already be on the roster. It's just we've been missing that role for so long that, you know, I'll just be glad when we get it back, right?
No, I'm with you.
What's your biggest surprise?
Just in general?
Yeah, just, you know, recruiting day in general.
I'm surprised that Saban was able to close with 10 guys in the last 2 days when he lost Kirby Smart and Mel Tucker on his coaching staff. I don't care if it's a service that ranks him number one or ranks him number two. I don't think anybody out there ranked him lower as two. To go from 9 to 1 or 2 on the last couple of days in this highly competitive world, when you lose a veteran of your staff like Kirby Smart, whose name has been advertising for Georgia the whole time we were in the playoffs, right?
Sure, sure.
I mean, he wasn't wearing Georgia stuff, but by damn, the media kept talking about it.
Sure.
And so to lose him and then him take Mel Tucker, you know, who was having some success recruiting as well, to lose those two guys at the end like this and close with 10 guys in the last 2 days to go from number 9 to 1 or 2, man, that's just pretty damn impressive. There's just no other way to spin it.
Yeah, I agree, right? And, you know, the takeaway that I have from that is Saban's heart is still in this. You know, everyone wants to, you know, the media wants to be right more than they want to get it right. And so they're going to continue to say the dynasty's over, the dynasty's over, the dynasty's over. And one day they'll be right. You know, a stopped clock is right twice a day, right? So the media just wants to be that stopped clock. And if I keep saying it and keep saying it and keep saying it, one day I'll get to say I'm right. And so everyone says, you know, Saban's going to leave, Saban's going to retire, Saban's had enough. The crazies at Alabama are going to run him off. He doesn't want to stay. And you start thinking about and so you start thinking about, well, when you see other programs, and for some reason Bobby Bowden's mind, you know, pops in my head.
It's a great example, dude, with the
I know the age, you know, the age differential between Bowden and Saban is significant, but it's less significant if you think about a Spurrier and Saban. And so if you were to go back and sort of dissect, when did those sort of empires start to crumble? Well, if you kind of were able to sort of, you know, pick it apart and look at it, it was when recruiting started to take a little bit of a slip. And so could someone have written the article, if we had finished with the 9th best class, that it's starting to slip? Well, you could. I mean, people said the dynasty was over when we lost to Ole Miss, right? And so another team could have the 9th ranked recruiting class, and you could say they've got the best coach since sliced bread. And so it's all how you want to frame it. But if you're looking for what's that sort of chink in the armor, what's that opportunity where there could be slippage, it would be easy to say there wasn't that final sprint the last 10 days going into signing class. And that sprint was there. And so if you want to sort of pick your story around, I'm looking for the sort of the crumble in the wall or the crack in the wall. It wasn't this recruiting class.
Well, you could absolutely have made an excuse, right?
Sure.
I mean, if you wanted to be that guy, which he's not and ever never will be, right? You could have absolutely said, you know, there were obstacles in our way with only 11 kids committed a week before signing day.
Yep.
And so I agree with you that the guy is driven by what he does. It's not a job. It's not work to him. It's his passion. And he could do it 25 hours a day and eat, sleep, and drink it.
Yep.
And, you know, we're just glad that he's here.
Yep. Well, man, that's a lot of ground we covered.
in all of this, is there anything that we missed? Is there anything that you just wanted to get out there that didn't, that we didn't cover?
Yes, I got something. I just thought of it. Okay. First of all, guys, this is why we hope you enjoy listening. We hope you will get something today that you do not get on every other blurb that you listen to. And you're going to get this great nugget here at the end if you're still listening to our show, which always runs long.
Don't hurt yourself there, man.
Man, did you love the story of getting the great long snapper as a walk-on?
Yes, and a kicker.
I mean, come on. There's another example of who am I? I'm Alabama freaking Crimson Tide. Because I need me a good long snapper, and I don't really want to use a scholarship on one right now. And you know we're a dynasty, and you'll come here because we're the best at what we do, and you will fit in nicely to something we need.
Right. With the opportunity to earn a scholarship. Because, of course. Clauses on scholarship right now, and you know, that was a year that we had more to give than we've got now. But – you know, who's getting that scholarship when Cole graduates? Well, this kid will.
Right? Absolutely correct. And it's just, it's another example of reloading at a position that nobody would think about. Nobody right. Today, granted, somebody wrote an article about it and God bless them for doing so. But that's one of those little things that makes this program what it is.
Yep. I agree.
Well, man, I'm ready to do A-Day now. They just need to freaking go take their spring break, get their butt back, strap it on, and let's do another show to talk about A-Day.
Absolutely, man. There's probably a dozen topics that we could spend some cycles on, so we'll have to see if we can record something and get it out there. But talking recruiting is always fun, and it's always, to me, fun to kind of put a stake in the ground and then kind of check back and see how do we do with these guys. So. So we'll kind of keep note of what we talked about, and we'll revisit as the season kind of unpacks. But, hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast powered by Bama Hammer. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.